on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our Thursday, June 10th edition of Invest Talk. And our goal is to be a place you can come for information, as you know, financial news, information, and maybe give you some encouragement. Making serious money choices more challenging than ever, as everybody has found out in recent years. We try to fill in the blanks of your knowledge if we can. You can ask your questions with our 24-hour listening line, or you can talk to us live Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 Pacific time. Also via Twitter at KPP Financial. That's our Twitter ID. Or you can get a note directly to us, to me, by clicking on Contact Steve, or Justin by clicking on Contact Justin, right there on investtalk.com. We try to help you control the herding instincts, the herd. One of the founders of KPP Financial, Jerry Klein, would talk about the herding instinct by telling the story of the bell cow. Bell cow, B-E-L-L cow, C-O-W. At a certain time every day, this particular cow would decide to stop grazing and head back to the barn. So she would begin walking. The bell would sound that's tied around her neck, and all the other cows would stop eating and follow her. Now, Investopedia defines herding this way. A mentality characterized by a lack of individual decision or decision making or thoughtfulness, causing people to think and act in the same way as a majority of those around them. In finance, herd instinct could relate to instances in which individuals gravitate to the same or similar investment based almost solely on the fact that everybody else is in it. The fear of regret of missing out on a good investment is the driving force behind herd instinct. And of course, by the way, the herding mentality is at the root of big rallies and sell-offs. It is always at the root, herding instinct, at the big rallies and sell-offs. These big moves in the market are based on very little fundamental information. It's all about the herd. What is everybody doing? I got to do it too. The dot-com, of course, and the bubble that burst, that's a perfect example. Everybody thought this is the new way to do business with dot-com forever, and you don't care about fundamentals. No, everything's going to just keep going up and up and up. Housing, same thing. Everything's going to keep going up and up and up. Well, it doesn't keep going up and up and up. You know anything about the tulip craze in the, what was it, the 1500s, 1600s? I forgot when. Everybody thought tulips were going to just keep being worth more and more and more money. More than gold, far more than gold. So how do you do something about that? I got a possible herding talking point that we're going to discuss today. Anyways, we're helped to answer any questions for this 1 hour. We want to teach you how to try to recognize the herding instinct if we can. So let's go ahead and get to our what we primarily do, and it's answering questions. So let's take this question from our 24-hour listening line. This one came after our last program, and the number, of course, is 888-99-CHART, 888-3899-CHART. Here's a question that came in between programs.
Hi, Steve or Justin. This is Pete from sunny Vegas, and I have a question. Sometime around the beginning of the year, this was talked about with a few different radio show guys that I listen to. They talked about some new rule that happened the beginning of the year that you could only do one transfer of IRA from point A to point B. The real question has to do with the fact that I'm 63, and whenever I get a certain amount of money in my 401k, I'm still working, I like to transfer it somewhere around $5,000. When it gets to $5,000, I want to transfer it over to my Scottrade account. The way I generally do it is I tell them to send me a check, not a distribution, but where it's a IRA rollover, and then I bring the check over to Scottrade and I deposit the $5,000. I've done that a few times a year last year, but this year I've already done it once, And the other thing I might be doing is I might be transferring some really small amount that I have at Fidelity. I might be transferring it over to Scottrade so that I only have to deal with one brokerage. So the real question I have is, what are the rules or regulations that I have to do? I really don't want to go over it and create a problem. Thank you, guys. Have a nice time. Enjoy your day. Bye-bye.
I don't think it has anything to do with what you're doing, roll over from a 401k to an IRA. I don't remember that rule. There's a vague recollection about it in an IRA to a possible Roth IRA one time a year. I kind of want to think that's it, but I don't know. Remember, I'm not. That's not my specialty, is these rules and regulations. I just know them because I, you know, confront them often. But I don't remember that rule. Maybe another caller can help us and give us a call. Maybe there's an accountant out there listening can help us. Is there such a rule, and how is it applied? But I doubt it that it has anything to do with rolling over from a 401k to an IRA. I don't think that is any restrictions on that. But thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Maybe we can get a proper answer for you later on in the show. That would be very helpful. So what happened to the market? Everybody saw the big move up yesterday, of course. So you always want to look for a follow-through. And we had a bit of follow-through. Nothing strong. The Dow was up 39 points. And NASDAQ was up 6. And the S&P up 4. But I thought that was fairly impressive after a pretty big move yesterday. And this is after we've had a number of weeks. Well, I wouldn't say weeks. Maybe we should call it a number of days. Because I do believe it's only been the last couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks of weakness in the market. Three weeks. And then this week, it looks like we're going to have a positive week as long as tomorrow cooperates. As of the day before yesterday, the market was down for the year. Now we're a little bit above it for the year, a little bit above it. So we have done a lot of work going nowhere so far this year. But sometimes that's the case. I mean, there's a long, and the market is slightly overvalued. So for it to go sideways for a long period is not a bad thing. Because you want the valuations, the earnings to catch up with the valuations to some degree. You don't want to get too stretched. And then, of course, now you're talking about a bubble and you're back to herd mentality. We don't really have a herd mentality going on here in the United States at this point. Because, you know, there's no huge stretch of the market one way or another. I don't see it anyways. Maybe you can tell me if I'm wrong. 888-99-CHARTER is our number, 888-992-4278. So we're going to talk about diversification, correctly diversifying today. Correctly diversifying. Some people don't, you know, think they could diversify by buying, no, I'll buy an S&P 500 mutual fund, and then I'll buy a blue chip dividend paying fund, and then I'll buy a large cap fund. You just bought everything in the same area of the market. That's not diversification. You have three funds overlapping each other horrendously. So what is the correct way to diversify? So you can, there's different things we need to talk about in diversification. And I want to mention May retail sales report that came out today. May retail sales, talk about the retail sales. Remember, we are a consumer-driven economy. I like to keep an eye on the consumer. For an investor in the stock market, you always want to be aware of the pulse of the economy, because that drives stock prices. Earnings drive stock prices. And in earnings, how do earnings occur? Well, a strong economy. Is it growing? Is it shrinking? What's it doing? So we want to talk about May retail sales report that came out today. I also want to talk about China and its markets, the Shanghai Composite in particular. Do you know what's happened? Do you know what's going on there? Well, we're going to discuss it today. I'm going to talk about what's going on in the Shanghai Composite market. And also, to flush that out, I want to also talk about the China economy, but in particular, what's going on in the Chinese markets? Are we seeing bubble territory? Is that what is happening? We'll see. And of course, we all are watching the Greek situation, and we know negotiations stalled today. I I've said a few weeks ago, I don't know, maybe a month and a half ago, that I believe that they will come to an agreement, but it's going to be after a long, hard, brinkmanship on both sides. And that's what you're seeing. We don't, I think the brinkmanship could get out of control and things fall apart really fast. I think that can happen. And I think brinkmanship is very dangerous. But you got the European Union, the ECB, you got the Germans versus Greece. And Greece wants to stand up and doesn't want to be told what to do, but they have their hand out at the same time. If you don't want to be told what to do as a country, don't be bankrupt and reliant on other people paying your bills. That's pretty simple. And you know what? I don't exclude the U.S. out of this. No. I include them. You want to have control of your own destiny, and you can do that. You can take that down to the individual. You want control of your own destiny? Don't be relying on other people to pay your bills. The bank. Don't borrow money. The credit card company. Don't feel a prisoner of yourself because you put yourself in a financial box. You don't have to do that. You don't. Neither does Greece, but they've done it. Now, how are they going to get out of this box? This box is big and deep. So we're going to talk about those things. But what's on your mind is, of course, the most important. So what do you want to talk about? And do you know what your risk score is? Your risk score number? 41, 52, 20, 80. Well, there's a way to know in investments how much risk you like taking and how much risk you actually are taking. And it's free. And it's on our website. You can match up your retirement portfolio with your personal risk score. You can try for free. It's called a free risk analysis tool. It's on investtalk.com. It's there for everyone to use. That's investtalk.com. 888-992-4278. Let's get right back to some questions here. Same number, 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T, anytime.
Hi, this is Robert from Discovery Bay. I used to listen to you on the radio, now podcast. I'm calling about Chesapeake Energy. I was curious, they beat earnings on their last quarter when oil prices were lower, and now that oil prices are in the low 60s, I'm wondering why analysts have changed their estimates for lower losses on their next earnings and later on. Thank you very much. Bye.
Okay, Chesapeake Energy Company, symbol CHK, engaged in exploration and production of natural gas and crude oil properties throughout the United States. They made $1.44 in 2014, $1.50 in 2013. This year, they're going to lose 16 cents a share, and next year, they're going to lose less, 7 cents a share. So still going to lose money. Therein lies your problem. When are they going to get back to the black and start gaining money? I will say this, recently we've had some insider buying coming into it. It's at, $12.50. That's a new 52-week low. The chart looks terrible. I would be very careful because sales are falling because of the lower oil prices, and you would think they start to turn around, and they haven't because oil prices stabilized in the last month or so. So I would be very careful with Chesapeake Energy. It's just not my favorite. It's pretty big, $8.3 billion, but it's just not strong enough. Decent dividend yield, 2.8. A bit too much debt for me. I would probably stay away from it. The analysts don't really care for it either, so I would stay away from it. If you'd like to see the investment program offered by KPP Financial, just go to an investments tab on investtalk.com. You want to see what kind of programs we have, what we can help you with, different risk levels of how much risk do you want to take? Or do you want an income portfolio? That's what the balanced income program is. One of our more popular. I'll watch for your questions here at 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Have a conversation about your money issues with portfolio managers. Financial Advisors. The podcast is produced live every weekday from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time, and our number is 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. We wanted to talk about diversification. how to diversify correctly. Too many people, I see too many portfolios that their diversification is that they have a bunch of big cap dividend paying mutual funds and they think they're diversified. And many people think diversification is, well, you just buy stocks and bonds. Well, that is diversifying, okay, asset classes. And of course, there's three main asset classes, the traditional asset classes, and that's stocks, bonds, and cash. Okay, but in these modern times, you can diversify better. Diversify better, even within those asset classes. In stocks, of course, there's the large cap, small cap, mid cap, growth versus value kinds of stocks. But also, how about foreign stocks? There was very difficult to diversify away from our stock market if you wanted to and invest in someone else's stock market just a few years ago. But with the advent of ETFs and ADRs, American Depository Receipts, with ETFs of foreign countries and foreign markets, you can diversify in a stock portfolio away from the stock market. And you know what? There are times when you should do that. In our last conference, we talked about that kind of thing. But also in bonds, they have the same ability. We have the same ability today, which was a lot more restrictive years ago, to diversify not only in, different years, ladder a bond 1, 2, 3, 5, 7 years out, but also, traditionally you had corporate bonds, you had government bonds, you had federal government bonds, municipal bonds, state bonds, pretty good diversification there. But now, again, you can do a lot better by investing, or a lot different diversification, a lot better diversification away from our market using foreign bond ETFs, foreign bond fund ETFs. All I'm saying is we have the ability to diversify more and better than we used to. And you should take advantage of these things. Now, within the term diversification, the traditional was stocks, bonds, and cash. But now you're also going to diversify into commodities with ETFs and currencies with ETFs. So now we can diversify even away from stocks, bonds, and cash if we want to. And diversification is very good at times when one sector of the market, one area of assets are stretched, you want to diversify. And you get to diversify using ETFs into real estate as well. I mean, it's much easier for the average person to get really good diversification if they want it. Now, if you want to concentrate your investments and not diversify, that is a personal choice of yours. How much risk are you willing to take? How much risk do you want to take? The less diversification you do, the more risk you're taking. And there's nothing wrong with taking a risk, but only if you know that you're taking that risk and you know how much risk you're taking. Our phone is always open to your questions, whether you're new to investing or have a more complex situation. 888-99-CHARTER is our anytime number.
Hi, my name is Brandon. I listen on the radio, and I would like your entry point and your estimation of Starbucks. Thank you.
Starbucks. If you don't know who Starbucks is, it's like not knowing McDonald's or Boeing or Johnson & Johnson. I mean, it's a huge blue chip company now. And it deserves, because it's been growing so fast, it probably deserves a more than market average PE ratio. It probably does. But as they get bigger and bigger and bigger of these companies, the growth rate starts to have a problem. And you can't grow like you used to. Starbucks is still growing about 15-18%. I mean, it's been slowing down. Last year probably averaged more like 10-12, but recently it picked up a little bit. And of course the stock has gone up because the growth rate perked up again. It has 21,000 coffee shops worldwide, about a little over 14,000 in the United States. And so they're going to make $1.57 this year, which is the most they've ever made. And their earnings are going up every year. Next year, it's $1.86. That's an 18% increase from last year to this year. Another 18% for next year. That's why it's at a 37 PE. It's huge and it's growing. Pays a 1.2%. Entry point. Well, it made a new 52-week high yesterday. We call that a breakout. It has broken out. So if you're going to buy Starbucks, you just go ahead and buy it because you don't really have, it doesn't have any resistance on the upside. If you want to wait for a pullback, there's a little gap to about $50, only $2 down. That's a gap it needs to fill, maybe $49.75 or so. Another big gap and a better entry point for a pullback is around $42, $41, $42. And that's one I would probably suggest you wait for. But you may not get it. It's at a 52-week high yesterday, breaking out, growing strong. Don't become part of the herd, though. Be very, very careful. It's overvalued. But it deserves to be overvalued. Just how much is the question. Now, speaking of diversification, check out the info sheet on diversification. It's yours free. Sign up at the InvestTalk Insider on InvestTalk.com. So, let's talk about retail sales. It was up 1.2% for May, as reported today. 1.2%, not bad, except that they expected it to be 1.5%. But still not bad, because last month it was only 0.2% up. But this was the third month in a row that it's increased. So that's good. And if you take out, gasoline and auto sales, which are pretty auto gasoline because prices go up and down, and you take out auto sales, it could be pretty big items on a day-to-day basis, and not count, take away transportation, the airplanes, and it was still up 1%. So the number was pretty good. Just not great. And, that's what you can say typically of all the numbers in recent weeks. They're pretty good, but just not very great. Not to the point where we'd like to see strengthening economy. Now, the market may not like strengthening the economy. They may be more content with these numbers that are pretty good, but not too bad, simply because they want to keep the Federal Reserve off the back of the market. And what that means is they don't want the Federal Reserve to raise rates. Why is that? Did you ever ask yourself, why is everybody so concerned about raising interest rates? The Federal Reserve only controls the overnight rate, not all the rates. They control the rate they charge to banks when they borrow money from the Federal Reserve. And if they start raising those rates, the banks pass along those increases to you and me, the consumer. But they don't have to, but they do. So that's when we talk about the Federal Reserve raising rates. That's what they only control that rate. Every other rate is all controlled by you, me, and our economy. But the reason why investors are so concerned about rates being increased, because historically, when Federal Reserve started raising rates, they continued to raise their rates a minimum four times in a row. Minimum. Always have. And they're worried that that's what the pattern's going to be when they start raising rates again. And if that's the case, that means that the economy is too strong and they're trying to slow it down. I don't know if that's a correct assumption of the market out there, but that's the traditional viewpoint, that the Federal Reserve will slow down the economy if they raise rates. Okay, well, today, with the rates so very low, historically unheard of, they're so low, almost at zero, to get to just normalization, they need to be, 3%, 2.5%, 3.5%, somewhere in there. And that's going to take forever. They're not going to be doing it. They're probably not going to go back there anytime soon. I mean, we're talking years, especially if we have no inflation, and we don't have it. So that's the other traditional reason interest rates would go up is fight inflation, slow down the economy. That will fight inflation by slowing down the economy and make it overheated, and then it gets overheated, and then it will collapse. So that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to control the pace of the economy. And the market is trying to interpret what they're going to do. So the numbers, retail sales numbers, they're not that great, not that bad. The market kind of likes that. That's, you don't see, you know, it's one of the reasons why you're not seeing a big correction in the market, because this, these numbers coming out in, on the economy are not strong enough for the Fed to be too aggressive in raising rates. The market participants like that. They like the fact that the Fed won't intervene. Maybe the Fed would just raise the rates once and then stop for a while. It's kind of my opinion, by the way. Unless the market, unless the economy really starts to heat up, I can't. Well, there's no reason for them to raise rates other than to try to normalize them, not to do anything to affect the economy. That's why they may only raise them once and then stop. Our first priority is answering questions. So let's pick a call that came in before the program today. 24-hour listening line is always open. You can call anytime you want. 888-99-CHART. Doug from San Diego called.
I just wanted to get your opinion going forward, which commodity areas you might think would be the best to be in, or is it is that sector likely to cool off at some point? And I'm pretty much in oil, agriculture, steel, just some of the basics like that. I'll just listen to your comments.
I think oil actually is probably the commodity that will recover more so than others. I'm talking about other than steel. I do like precious metals for a short term. I do think that the dollar is probably, you know, it's probably near its peak. I mean, it's fallen off the peak it was several months ago, and it's kind of chattering now. So I don't think the dollar is really going to push much higher. And that would help commodities if it goes down, because oil and precious metals are traded in dollars almost everywhere. Other commodities, well, you know, timber out of Canada, I think that, yeah. Some of these things have, you know, everybody already knows that the housing is recovering decently here. I look for Europe. I look to Europe. And, of course, China, as to what they're going to do, putting pressure on commodities up or down. And a recovering Europe tells me that oil probably will go up. China's still growing, but growing slower. So they'll put a little bit of pressure on commodities. And keep an eye on inflation in those parts of the world. You know, emerging markets, China, I keep an eye on that. So it's difficult. It's difficult. But I do favor, of all the commodities, probably oil. It's at $60 a barrel. I don't think it's going to dramatically go up. But I could see it moving back up to $70 to $75 a barrel, maybe by year end, if Europe continues to recover. Okay, time for InvestTalk personal day-to-day money choices that can have a lasting impact on your finances. The big secret about mortgages, well, there really is no real secret. For the lender, it's all about competition and risk. They have to. They want to get the most they can get, but they compete. They can't, you know, on a mortgage, they can't raise the rates too high, and the mortgage rates are pretty low because money from Fed is pretty low. But they still got to compete with other lenders. So how do you do that? Well, they can offer lower rates to better creditworthy customers. That's what they do, and of course they want to attract you. But how about you? How about you, the consumer? What can you do to save money on mortgage? Well, you can save big money with a short-term loan. You can go with a 15-year instead of a 30. You know, 15 years are like 3.3%. A 30-year is like 4%. Add that up over the years, and that adds up a lot of money, and you pay off the mortgage at 15 instead of 30. Yes, the monthly payment is higher. Maybe that's the problem, but it still can save money. Let's say it is a problem. Well, how about this? You can save big money by paying bi-weekly instead of just once a month. Many lenders are allowing that, will encourage that. You can ask your bank for that. You can, and you, the consumer, will save a lot of money over the life of the loan. A lot of money. You should figure out the difference. You'd be surprised. I think you'd be very surprised how much money you can save. And that's InvestTalk Personal, everybody. Is there a topic you want to know more about? Get in touch. I'd love to hear you. What do you want to talk about? We're here right now at 888-99-CHART. Or you can write me a note by clicking on Contact Steve at InvestTalk.com.
Get a no-cost, expert opinion exploring your retirement options. Meet up with Steve at one of the KPP Financial satellite offices in California, or you can join up on Skype or even on the telephone. To reserve your time, just go to investtalk.com and click on Schedule a Meeting.
So we have a caller, John, San Jose, wants to talk about real estate. How are you doing, John?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for answering. Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
So I have a question for you. I wanted to give my house is already paid off. I would like to give the house to my son.
Yes.
Is there any real estate tax penalty that I would need to do?
Yes. You got to be very careful. When you gift anything to your children or somebody else, there's limits how much you can gift to them, and if then you're going to have to pay taxes. They are going to have to pay income tax on the gift. So you're trying to gift real estate, a house. Now, there might be different rules, but one of the things you, when you say gift it to them, there's a rule called the step-up rule. And I'm not hoping, John, I'm not wishing you to die or anything, but if you died and you left that house to your son, he would get what's called a stepped-up value of the house on the day you die. In other words, he would not have to pay capital gains on that tax from when you bought it to what it's worth when he sells it, but from when you die to what it's worth when he sells it. So it's called a stepped-up value. If you give it to him, you trigger tax consequences. So before you do that, I would very seriously talk to a CPA about it and see how you can gift it to them without triggering taxes. And that's the biggest issue. So don't sign over the ownership rights to them. Don't do it that way. That's the way that you're going to cause tax problems. And what if it's such a high tax bill that he can't afford it? You're going to force him to sell the house just to pay the taxes. So, and you're in San Jose. John, is there a house in San Jose?
Yeah, correct.
Because, the house, for everybody else, all the properties in San Jose and the Bay Area have skyrocketed in value. So,
the house is around 700K. Uh-huh. So I want to see if I can change the title to him.
You can change the title. That's easy. But the thing you want to worry about is taxes when doing that. So check that out, please, before you do that. Okay, John? Thanks for the call.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. We're going to go talk to Jerry, who's in Utah. Hi, Jerry. How you doing?
Good, Steve. How are you? How's it going?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
Welcome back from vacation.
Yeah, actually, I was in the airport in Utah just this morning.
Oh, my gosh. Did you get to see the beautiful Wasatch? You got to see Green Mountain? It's beautiful out here.
I did. I saw the mountains from the airport, and it's very interesting topography out there for people who haven't been there.
It is, yeah. I definitely fell in love with the mountains and been here for a few years. But nonetheless, thanks for taking the call.
Thank you for calling, John, Jerry.
I've got a question about 401k calculations that they do to calculate a return.
Uh-huh, sure.
And so I'm with T. Rowe Price, and apparently the way T. Rowe Price calculates your return is something that they say is fairly standard called a time-weighted daily valuation calculation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, I just compare that to what I have in Quicken, which is what I seem to believe that Quicken just uses a percent change. So if you're on your 401k, it says you're doing a lot better than you think you are. But is that a standard way to report? Because for me, it's just simple math. You just take a percentage change, and that's your return. But the T. Rowe Price method is clearly always looking better.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with either method. For you and me, Jerry, it's just simple. How much did I buy this thing for? How much is it worth today? And that's how much gain I have. Pretty simple, straightforward. And time weighted, I never was a big fan of that because it's confusing to most people. It's nothing wrong with it, but it's confusing. And for those people who don't know what time weighted is, It's a calculation. Well, I don't know if I want to get into that. Jerry, is there, in a 401k, it really doesn't matter since there's no tax consequences of any kind. So what is there? Sure. You're just interested in why they do that?
Yeah. Well, I guess when I look at my returns, they're all negative. Uh-huh. If you just do a very simple percentage calculation, they're all negative in all of their funds.
Uh-huh.
But then when you go on their website, you're up 4.2%. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you know they're going to calculate it the best advantage of that to show them that their funds are doing really well. Time weighted, because I would just do based on how you're computing your numbers. I think that's a fair way for you and for them, but they will never do that. Most mutual funds, especially if it disadvantages them, they'll use the method that makes them look best, and then they'll explain in the fine print how they calculated that. But sure. No one reads the fine print. No one reads it.
Don't you think that's misleading?
Yes.
I mean, if people look at their return and they say, "Oh, I'm doing great. I'm going to stick in this fund.
Yes.
This looks great." It's
misleading. They also will do tricks like, "For the last 18 months, this has been our performance." Well, why'd you pick 18 months or 24 right. months? I like from calendar year 12 months to calendar year 12 months. I think that's the fairest way that you can do it instead of picking a time frame that you want. And they do that all the time. 1, 3, 5 year returns. Well, what 1, 3, 5? What did you do it from calendar year to calendar year? Not necessarily. So, Jerry, you got to be real careful. I'm glad you picked up on it because it's not what they seem to say it is all the time. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks. Now it's time to get your question in before we're done for the day, everybody. 888-99-CHARGE, how you reach me. Any money question is good. I may not know the answer, but I do have a lot of computers in front of me to help me. I'm Steve Peasley, and this is Invest Talk.
Here's another benefit when you sign up for our Invest Talk Insider program, a brief list of real estate investment trusts, REITs, that should be on investors' radar if they're looking for exposure to this dividend-focused sector. You can sign up for this free InvestTalk Insider program on investtalk.com. Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. A simple step to help you retire earlier with more money in the bank and more money to spend. 10 ways index funds could save your retirement. That's a key topic on Friday, June 12th.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's talk about China. Let's talk about specifically Shanghai Composite Index, China. China's stock market. The Shanghai Composite. It was at 6,000 in October of 2007. And it fell within 12 months, 70% to 1,700. Now remember, our market fell 45% during that time. Theirs fell 70 to 1,700. Do you know what it is today? 5,000. And it's rising. The China Central Bank is cutting rates. They've cut rates, interest rates, 3 times in the last 6 months already, trying to spur their economy. The stock market has risen 150%, the Chinese Shanghai Index, 150% in the last 12 months. They recently passed some rules reducing restrictions for foreign investors. They also passed some rules to allow Chinese to open up more than one stock account and increasing dramatically allowing money to be borrowed to buy stocks. That's going to be a big problem, everybody. That's going to be a big problem. Looks like the Chinese have cycling out of their housing that really got out of control and has lost value in the last couple of years, and they're moving into the stock market. Now, at the same time, all this, the Shanghai's gone to 5,000, to reducing interest rates, allowing less restrictions, foreigners can buy more, That's all pushing stock prices up, and it's going to keep rising. I'm not saying it's not. At the same time all that's happening, the Chinese economy has slowed to 7% growth from, what, 10%, 11%, 7.5% last year. It's been slowing its growth rate for several years now in a row. Startup companies in China are selling at 140 times earnings per share. Sounds like the dot-com to me. There are higher multiples, P-E ratio, price-to-sales ratio, higher multiples in the Shanghai Index today than there was in 2007 when it collapsed. Higher multiples. And again, that margin debt, the Chinese people borrowing money to buy Chinese debt, that is extremely high. This is a recipe for a bubble implosion. But will it be from 6,000 like it was in 2007, or will it be from 10,000? See, that's what you can't tell. And we talked about herd mentality. The herd mentality is really obvious. Everybody's jumping in the Shanghai stock market. Chinese people feel this is the way to make money, just like they felt it was a way to make money in a property before that stopped. And it is, as long as everybody's doing it. As long as everybody keeps on doing it. You just don't know when it will stop. You don't know when, but it will. Be very careful. Okay. Let's see if we can answer one more question before the hour is ended. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hello, this is Rex from Montgomery, Alabama. What I was interested in was the ticker symbol PBYI, that is Puma Biotech. They have gone down recently, and I own some puts, and I wondered where the bottom might be. Thank you. Have a great day. Bye.
Okay. Puma Biotech, Inc., out of Los Angeles, develops drug candidates for the treatment of various forms of cancer. Okay? So that's what they do. They are losing money, losing a lot of money. It is a company that the bottom is zero. That's the bottom. It's selling for $133 right now per share. That's huge for a company that has no sales and no money. Announced positive results from phase 3 clinical trials of PB272 treats breast cancer. Phase 3, positive results. That's why it's selling for what it is. I mean, last year, in 2014, it went from 53 to 279. That was the range, 53 to 279. Today, it's at 116. On a technical basis, you have to go to a weekly chart to even see any support. And that support is all the way down. It's support right where it is today. The next support is around $50 to $60, somewhere around that. Remember, it's 133. Time to close, wrap it up for the day, everybody. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we hope you have a good evening. Let's meet again here tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.